Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, September 9, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 76 by the Numbers. Illinois, 252,353 cases, up 1,392. 8,186 deaths, up 7. Champaign County, 2,906, up 33. 20, Douglas, 243, up 1. 5 deaths. Ford, 120, up 4. 4 deaths. Piatt, 103, no change, 0 deaths. Vermilion, 382, up 11, 4 deaths. Illinois impact. Ford County's fourth fatality linked to long-term care outbreak. 524 active cases in Champaign County. For the second time in a week, Ford County has lost a resident to COVID-19. Its fourth fatality of the pandemic was a man in his 80s linked to an outbreak at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pels, a health official told Deb Pressey. Of 14,456 new tests, 33 came back positive in Champaign County, a rate of 0.2%. The number of hospitalized residents remained 3 for the fourth straight day in the county, where the 7-day positivity rate dropped to 0.6%. Of Champaign County's 524 active cases, 47 involve residents of towns outside Champaign-Urbana, 15 in St. Joseph, 7 in Mahomet, 6 in Savoy, 5 in Rantoul and Tolono, 2 in Fisher, Pasotum and Thomasboro, and 1 in Gifford, Ogden, and Sydney. With 3 days' worth of data still to be input, the number of unique University of Illinois campus cases since classes began on August 24 stood at 1,242 on Tuesday. 51 Vermilion County residents are isolating at home, and another 4 are hospitalized. The county's 7-day positivity rate stood at 2.6%, after 11 new cases were added Tuesday. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. Urbana, Council Hears Review of Woman's Arrest by Ben Zichterman, Urbana. The independent reviewers of the arrest of Alea Lewis said they hope their recommendations can lead to fewer arrests like hers. Hillard Heinz concluded that Sergeant Michael Cervantes and Officer Eric Ruff's actions were consistent with departmental policy, but made 18 recommendations, including an explicit mention of de-escalation in the use of force policy. These are the challenges of our time, Senior Vice President Deborah Kirby said. We hope it has value for the community to help reduce incidents such as these. The Chicago-based firm concluded that Cervantes complied with UPD policy regarding the use of force when he grabbed Lewis's wrist and pushed his knee and elbow into her back while detaining her, according to the report. After getting a call of a shooting and a man with a gun in East Urbana, his thumb was broken during the struggle. The report also found that Ruff used only that amount of force that reasonably appears necessary when he punched Lewis in the head and kneed her in the ribs to get her to comply with him putting handcuffs on her. Alderman Jared Miller said that there is a clear lack of effort being made for de-escalation in this arrest, at least to a lot of folks. Kirby noted that we have the advantage of hindsight. We have the advantage of reviewing all the videos and listening to the 911 tapes. Had they waited that 30 seconds, we know today, perhaps, what would have happened, she added. But had Ms. Lewis been armed, had this happened, it could potentially be another circumstance. Alderwoman Julie Lout asked if it was common for officers to threaten to shoot subjects to get them to comply, as Ruff did, according to the report. Every situation is different, Hilliard Heinz, Senior Director Mark Jufrey said. Commands are being given for the civilians to raise their hands, to raise their arms. The commands weren't being followed. What was the 911 call? The call was a possible shooting. The review cost about $20,000, Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin said. The independent review followed an internal use of force review that found the officers complied with policy, and a review by Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz, who concluded that no laws were broken. Remembering Lou Brock, they really hit it off. Ex-Cardinal stole Villa Grove family's heart, by Bob Asmussen, Villa Grove. Jake Eversole simply called the Hall of Famer Lou, and Lou Brock called Jake Little Buddy. It was an unlikely friendship between a baseball legend and a kid from Villa Grove. Jake and Cardinal fans everywhere were saddened by Brock's death Sunday at age 81. I know he's in a good place, said Jake, now a Villa Grove High senior. He would be happy to go how he did. Everyone looked up to him as a good person. If you think of a star player, you would want him to be like Lou. From the first time they met, Jake and Brock always had a special connection. He would be talking to millionaires in a room, and I'd walk in and he'd come over and say, hi, and talk to me, Jake said. He would always drop what he was doing. We both loved baseball, and we loved talking to each other about it. Jake's dad, Jason, chronicled the family's friendship with Brock in a long Facebook post. How did the outfielder get to know Jake and his family? Well, it's a long story. It started with an event in Champaign, where Brock was the featured speaker. The limousine driver assigned to Brock that day couldn't stick around to take the star back home. That's when Jody Eversole, Jake's grandpa, stepped up. I said, I'll gladly give you a ride back to St. Louis, Jody told Brock. They climbed into Jody's car and made the 3-plus-hour drive to Brock's home. For lifelong Brock admirer and Cardinal fan Jody, it was heaven. He was always my hero growing up, Jody said, and he's my hero as a human. Brock and Jody became good friends, making trips together and meeting in St. Louis for games. Brock invited the Eversoles to Busch Stadium for a game in 2009. They were in an air-conditioned suite in steamy St. Louis. While the adults surrounded Brock, Jake watched the game from the outdoor seats at the front of the box. Brock went outside and sat with Jake for several innings, talking baseball and life. We just had a good bond, Jake said. It kept going every time we saw each other. Golden moments. Jake and Brock's friendship provides memories he will carry forever, like the time he attended Cardinals spring training in Jupiter, Florida, as a guest of Brock. It was before the 2011 season the Cardinals would go on to win the World Series. When Jake arrived, Brock had a jersey waiting for him that said Little Lou on the back. Jake watched the games with Brock from the dugout, played catch with Albert Pujols and his son, flicked sunflower seeds, and took a turn at the KMOX microphone. Lou took care of me like crazy. I was pretty much part of the team, Jake said. It was insane. When Jake returned to Villa Grove Elementary for the conclusion of the school year, he shared his spring training adventures. Not everyone believed him. Word of the disbelief got back to Brock, courtesy Jody. Lou asked me, "How much school does he have left?" Jody said. There were 3 more days of classes. Plenty of time for Brock to come up from St. Louis and confirm what Jake had told his classmates. Sure enough, Brock made the trip. Suddenly, everyone in Villa Grove believed Jake. "All my teachers, everyone was there, ready for him to sign autographs," Jake said. Villa Grove is a small town. Everyone knew he was there. He would always sign everything he could. Time and again, the Eversoles witnessed Brock's kindness towards fans, like the casual lunch at TGI Fridays in Effingham that turned into a 2-hour autograph session. He was asking little kids questions, "What position do you play?" He made it all about them, Jody said. Jason remembers being at another game with Brock. Rather than get an escort to their seats, Brock wanted to walk through the crowd. It took him more than an hour to move 50 feet because of all the handshakes and autographs. He said, "I want to make this a great experience for them because I'm an ambassador for the game, and I hope that somebody will do that for the next generation," Jason said. It was genuine time he gave to them. Breaking the rules. In 2014, Brock's wife Jackie threw a surprise party for Lou's 75th birthday. The event was held at the St. Louis Country Club. Jody was invited, as was Jake. Brock stopped by Jody's table and asked, "Where's my little buddy?" Jake didn't have a collared shirt to wear and wasn't allowed in the room. Jody pleaded his case, even dropping Brock's name a time or two. Didn't help. So Jake went swimming at his hotel along with friend Jarrett Burnett. Lou said, "Go get him," Jody said. Jody brought Jake back to the club. Brock put his arm around Jake and walked by the concierge, who earlier wouldn't let him in. "I was looking at the concierge and I said, 'What?'" Jody said. He said, "That's Lou Brock." I said, "I told you it was Lou Brock." He said, "Yeah, but I didn't believe you." After the party, the Eversoles were invited back to Brock's home, which includes a room full of baseball memorabilia. Brock told Jake and Jarrett baseball stories for hours. "It's priceless," Jody said. Then one time. At another Cardinal game, Jake and his family had seats from Brock that were close to the field. Cardinals catcher Yadier Molina saw Jake on the way into the dugout and tossed him a ball. Unfortunately, an older fan snatched the ball that was supposed to go to Jake. Brock arrived an inning or two later. The fan who took the original Molina ball asked Brock to sign it. Jody intervened and explained to Brock what had happened. Lou gives him the ball and says, "I don't sign things for adults who take things away from kids," and pitched the ball back to him, Jody said. Later, while in the on-deck circle, Molina came and asked Jake, "Where is the ball?" Jake told him what happened with the adult fan. Molina went to the umpire, asked for a ball, and brought it back to Jake. Always supportive. Jake doesn't play baseball these days. Instead, he concentrates on basketball. He was the leading scorer for the Blue Devils last season. "Basketball is definitely my sport now. Baseball was more my sport when I was younger," Jake said. What did Brock think when Jake gave up baseball? "He told me, 'Your one true passion, it's basketball. You can't change it. You've got to go hard at it.' He motivated me to do that," Jake said. From the Our County section, coronavirus response, Urbana Middle School. Remote learning sites a success for small number of students. By Anthony Zillis, Urbana. Large desks sit on the Urbana Middle School gym floor, spread evenly throughout the space. Principal Joe Wiemelt and his staff plan to fit around 40 students, which would keep them under the limit of 50 people in a room, but most of the desks sit empty every day. "I was expecting more," Wiemelt said, "because I figured there would be more students without Wi-Fi at home, or students that just wanted to get out of their home to focus because they had younger siblings and those sorts of things." Students come and go through the outdoor gym doors, only leaving the gym to use the restroom. A staff member checks their temperatures. They're able to access a Chromebook, headphones, and a microphone. And from there, they take synchronous classes for 2.5 hours with their teachers, many of whom are also in the same building. A limited number of staff members are there to supervise. "Students have been great," Wiemelt said. They followed all of the safety measures they need to be taking. They're wearing masks, staying 6 feet apart. It's a controlled environment because they're just coming in straight to a desk and then leaving straight out of the gym, so they don't really go into the school beyond the gym to use the bathroom. There's been very little interaction between students. The district started out conservatively with which students were invited, including those who didn't have access to Wi-Fi at home or students with more than one sibling at the school. Wiemelt said they've now expanded the breadth of students able to come. With at least 7 more weeks of remote learning on tap, the gym is ready and waiting for an influx of students. "I imagine as the school year progresses, we may get more students who realize it's easier possibly to come in and focus here," he said. "But maybe not. Maybe it's harder to get in here. Maybe they have to stay at home and supervise siblings and those sorts of things. Time will tell, I guess, if we get more students or not." For the students who file into the gym each day, the service has been incredibly valuable. One family, for instance, has multiple siblings at the school and not enough bandwidth at home to serve them all at once on separate computers. Because of that, Wiemelt considers the remote learning site a success, even though it hasn't been used as much as he envisioned. "It's been very, very good," Wiemelt said. "For these 5 or 6 kids that do come, without our space, they wouldn't have been able to do remote learning at all, because either they don't have Wi-Fi at home or they don't have reliable access." Around the area, St. Joe Ogden student tests positive. St. Joseph Ogden is the latest area school district to report a confirmed COVID-19 case involving a high school student who tested positive over Labor Day weekend. News Gazette correspondent Nora Mabry Daniels reports. Superintendent Brian Brooks said that due to the timing of the test and the student's original exposure, as well as the fact that students had not been in school since Thursday in the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, had no concerns about any further student or staff exposure at the school from this particular case. COVID-19 cases have cropped up throughout the area in recent weeks. Oakwood Grade School closed for 3 days last week after 3 positive cases were confirmed. The school reopened for in-person instruction on Thursday. Sarah Gordo announced over the weekend that high school classes were shifting to remote learning until at least September 21, after 7 people tested positive. It's the same action Salt Fork took a week earlier after 4 confirmed cases at the high school. On Friday, Mohammed Seymour district families were informed that a Lincoln Trail Elementary teacher and Middletown Prairie Elementary student had tested positive, leading to 18 people being quarantined. Late last week, Paxton Buckley Loda, announced that a high school student tested positive. 8 tents, like this one on the east side of the high school, have arrived in Mahomet for outdoor student learning. Plans were to have 2 up outside each of the district's 4 schools and ready for students to use this morning, Superintendent Lindsay Hall said. Testing totals. Confused by COVID-19 case counts? Public health official, here's why numbers vary. By Deborah Pressey, Champaign. If you're confused about the discrepancies in daily COVID-19 case reporting by the University of Illinois and the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, you are not alone. But there's an important reason the daily totals don't match, according to a public health official. Take September 4, for example. That was a day the University of Illinois reported 104 new positive saliva tests on campus. On the same day, the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District reported 88 new positive cases for all of Champaign County. Awais Vaid, deputy administrator at the Public Health District, said the University of Illinois reports positive tests immediately, while the Public Health District takes a few days investigating the details of each positive test before adding a single positive case. We only report cases once we have completed our investigation, and we will not match for a few days, he said. The data provided by the U of I is reflected in unique positive cases, but only unique positives for the saliva test being done on campus. The U of I doesn't have access to testing results for its students and staff who may have tested positive elsewhere, for example, at the state's free testing site at Marketplace Mall. Unique new cases are the first time an individual is detected COVID-19 positive by the SHIELD saliva test, the U of I data dashboard states. For public health investigators, a new unique case is someone who has tested positive for the first time, regardless of the testing method and testing location. Say a student tested positive at the drive-thru test site in Champaign or in their home communities over the summer, then tested positive in saliva testing after arriving on campus. Champaign County wouldn't count that new positive on campus because it's already been counted, Veit said. What's most misunderstood about the data is this, according to Veit. I think the biggest thing is the difference between a positive test and a positive case, he said. A positive test doesn't necessarily mean a positive case. It's also possible for those who tested positive in recent months to test positive again, even after they are no longer contagious, he said. People are most actively contagious 48 hours before and 48 hours after they show symptoms, and are usually not considered to be infectious after about 10 days, Vaid said. But the virus can remain in the body in a dead form for much longer, even for months, showing up as a positive test in someone who would be past the point of being able to spread the disease, he said. Also part of public health's investigation into each positive test is whether that person has COVID-19 symptoms and where that person lives, regardless of where they were tested. That's important because verified new positive cases add to the totals in counties where people live, not where they work or test positive or end up in the hospital. U of I students are counted as residents of Champaign County while they're living in Champaign County, so many of those unique new COVID-19 cases turning up in U of I testing data will make their way into the Champaign County totals after public health has verified they are unique new cases and not repeat positive tests. but a number of people employed on campus and elsewhere in Champaign County live in other counties, Vade said. Jay Simpson, Jay's take. In school, officers are a good resource. As a student of Champaign Central High School, I remember the resource officer at the time, Ed Wachala, bringing food to a student who was less fortunate than most. The student talked about that, in a good way, for the rest of our time at Central. The officer's gesture showed us there are still some good ones who care about the kids' well-being before anything else. It's part of the reason why I believe school resource officers are much needed in every middle school and high school. Not to be over-controlling, but just to be in the back of the students' minds, knowing there are consequences to bad decisions they make. If you think schools are having problems now, imagine if they didn't have resource officers. The officers keep things in line during the day to the best of their ability. Kids who are being disrespectful with students or staff usually get their act together rather quickly when they see the resource officer coming. That's not just because they're intimidated by the officer, but because more than likely they respect the officer. I've been around a few different resource officers from when I was in school and working at different schools. I honestly can say they are some of the coolest people I've met. Yes, they are police. Yes, they have to do their job, but as long as the kids are doing what they're supposed to be doing, they won't have to worry. Resource officers are placed in the schools to be more of a helping hand than a punisher. The resource officer we have at Urbana High School right now, Chad Burnett, is one of the best I've seen. He's a former teacher, so he really knows how to interact with students on an intellectual level, but also be an enforcer when needed. With all the police injustice we have going on, it's good to see good, genuine officers who treat people the right way. Burnett is well respected in the school from students to staff. We appreciate everything he does to keep our school as safe as possible. Jay Simpson, a student resource supervisor at Urbana High School, writes for the News Gazette. His column appears Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. He can be reached at jsimpson@news-gazette.com. From Area History. In 1920, the all-star team of the Champaign Commercial League wanted to play the University of Illinois baseball team since a proposed game with the St. Louis Cardinals had fallen through. Illinois Field could not be secured for the game that was proposed as a benefit for two local hospitals. In 1970, the University Community Gay Liberation Front announced plans for leafletting during University of Illinois registration to acquaint students with the organization that was established in 1969. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, September 9, 2020. Please stay tuned.